Coming up on Boston Public Radio, the government's shut down, but CNN's John King is not. We'll talk impacts for real people and politicians, and what's the way out. Then we'll see how bad John's Red Sox fever is. And what a coincidence, the federal government is partially shut down over Obamacare on the day states start marketing Obamacare to the uninsured. An editor from the Columbia Journalism Review will give us the latest.
Attorney General Martha Coakley, a Democratic candidate for governor, joins us. We'll talk to her both about the governor's race and what's going on in the Attorney General's office, and then our wildly popular new music segment with the Globe's Sarah Rodman and Edgar B. Herwig III. All that's coming up on Boston Public Radio, 89.7 WGBH. He's Jim Browdy. I am Marjorie Egan. You are listening to Boston Public Radio, 89.7 WGBH. Hello, Jim.
Hey there, Marjorie. So over at the Onion's headquarters, they have a much sunnier take on D.C. Their headline out of Washington reads like this, Marjorie: U.S. on verge of full-scale government hoedown. Now, if only the Democrats and Republicans are reaching across the aisle to zigzag, touch, and twist. But back in the real world, the House of Representatives heard this late last night.
Mr. Speaker, it is now midnight, and the great government of the United States is now closed.
Joining us on the line to continue our trip down reality lane is John King. John, of course, is CNN's chief national correspondent. Hey there, John.
A reality lane. Yes, that's the town I live in. We could call it some other things, but let's stick with that, actually. There are families out there listening.
Yeah, well, John, I want to ask you how what's affected in the government, but I'm just wondering, is it quieter down there with the government shut down, or does it just seem the same?
There was less traffic this morning, and I think that a lot of people are walking around quiet, like sort of in the numb, like, really? You know, really? Everybody knows I often use the term daycare center when we talk about this every week.
And, yeah.
Remember I call the fifth grade, and I say the fifth graders are going to sue me for slander? Well, they can. It's worse than the fifth grade. It's the members of Congress are exhausted because they've been playing this ping pong back and forth between the House and Senate for several days. And what I'm going to call the governing conservatives are embarrassed. There's a faction of the House Republican Party that are not governing conservatives. They are, and they're, a lot of them are very principled people, don't get me wrong. They believe they were sent here to do this, say no, to say no to spending, to say no to taxes, to say no to President Obama on just about everything, especially his health care plan, because they think it's big government. And that's the challenge. If you're John Boehner and you have your whole career been a governing conservative, meaning stake your position out, fight for it, then count the votes and cut your best deal, you're embarrassed that this is happening.
Well, what is affected? What is affected in the federal government, John King from CNN?
Look, I'm not going to minimize this for anybody who is not getting their paycheck for a couple of days. If it goes on long enough that people miss their next paycheck, that's a mortgage payment or a car payment or a tuition payment. So I'm not going to minimize that for one second, even though we can be about 110% sure if it goes on that long that people actually miss paychecks, it will be retroactive and they will make up the money. But that might not matter if you're living paycheck to paycheck and you've got to make a big payment next week. The economic impact, I think the markets will be down today, no doubt, but they've sort of factored this in that they won't tank and hit the slide unless it goes into a second week or something like that. For me, the biggest question, and I should just stop saying this, I keep saying that these guys are going to destroy whatever credibility they have left in the institution of government. We're supposed to be, we hold ourselves out to the world as the world's leading democracy. The Statue of Liberty is closed today. You can't go to Ellis Island. That's our beacon to the world. You want to be like us. Really? You want to be like us? We got a bunch of kids who can't pass us through the most basic job of government. And again, some of it's over a principled position. I know there are people listening who don't like Obamacare, who maybe think this is the right thing to do. But when the Democrats did not want to extend the Bush tax cuts and the president kept saying, I'm going to do this, did they shut down the government? Do the Democrats who want to close Gitmo and they're still furious it's open, do they find a way to shut down the government? There are places to fight, and there are things to where you have to say, okay, not on this big. This is a big thing, shutting down a government, then the debt ceiling. But I think, I know I'm rambling, but I think this is part of the problem, or part of the issue. Some people don't think it's a problem. a lot of these newer members who've come in recent years don't have experience in state legislatures like most members of Congress do traditionally, or some state government job. They're car dealers and they're doctors, but they weren't politicians beforehand. And they do go home to places, Tea Party members especially, where the people support them. They're doing what their constituents back home want in saying no. However, at some point, you have to make a calculation. In my view, you ran for the Congress. That's a national governing body. You don't always, it's not the city council. You don't always get your way. You don't always vote your local interest. Sometimes you've got to give, and these guys don't want to give.
You know, but John, I got a, speaking of Tea Party, I got a text from a Tea Party friendly friend this morning of mine who said, I can't wait till 12 o'clock till you tell us this is the end of Western civilization, Jim, just like it was the end of Western civilization with a sequester. And now we're months into that. The basic point being, and I'm sure you get it, is that, you know, so they're closing national parks, so that Faneuil Hall is closed and those kinds of things. The reality is the impact is not one that everybody other than those 800,000 to a million federal workers are going to feel in the short term, correct?
Correct. Your friend who sent you that message is dead spot on. Look what happened, you know, when we went through this 17 years ago. The world did not end. And some Republicans argue, you know, they got the attention, they got enough attention to actually do some business when they came back. So we should be careful to not over-dramatize this.
Yeah.
As I said, I think those people, look, 800,000 are home without pay, quote unquote. Another million are being asked to work without pay. If it goes on for, you know, a week or two, that is going to hurt those people. They will get retroactive pay. The thing about this, we're not going to save money with a government shutdown. We saved money with the sequester. We're not going to save money with a government shutdown. It'll actually end up costing money. But no, the world won't end. The question is, what does this do? What does this do to the morale in the Congress? What does it do to, you know, we talk about every week, are they going to do immigration? Are they ever going to do a grand bargain and deal with entitlement? If they can't do this, it's not easy, but if they can't do the simple stuff like just paying the government's bills, how can they tackle the profoundly hard issues facing the country?
John King, I want to talk about this pay for the 800,000 to a million federal employees, though. While it is true that at the end of the 95 shutdown, the Congress voted retroactively to pay people back for their work, there's no commitment up front. You're saying it's 110% likely, and I know there's a bill filed by some Republican Congressman Moran, I think, from Virginia, saying let's make a commitment now to pay him retroactively. But people like, I think it was the U.S. Attorney for the D.C. District, said don't count on it. The head of the Treasury Workers Union said it's a different economic and fiscal environment than it was in 1995. Don't count on it. So those workers aren't sitting home today quite as sure that they're going to get a check at the end of this as you are they?
I know they aren't, and I'm doing this based on A, history, and B, conversations with people in recent days where they think, you know, we'll make good on this in the end. This isn't about those workers. We don't want them to be the ones who are punished. And you saw the move yesterday, and it's obviously the politically it's the easy move to make sure the military gets paid.
Right.
They passed a resolution to make sure the military gets paid. Well, you know, it's hard for some of these guys to go home to districts where there may not be that many federal workers, but it's hard to go home. And this is no offense to our troops, who I hold in the highest possible esteem, but it's hard to go home and say, you know, Corporal Brody got his pay. But the, you know, Marjorie, who works at the EPA or at HUD or for the Agriculture Department, doesn't get hers because she's a public servant too, and she's doing the government's work whether you like or don't like the government. That's the person who's doing their job. So there'll be some politics about this and some posturing about this because of the economic conditions and because of the different political environment. It's possible, you know, somebody gets up and wants to filibuster or block it. But I don't think that's going to happen.
We're talking with John King from CNN about the government shutdown. You know, John, I reading the papers this morning and reading the different websites, I didn't seem a lot to be encouraged about vis-a-vis an end of this. And we reached the debt limit on October 17th, which is a little bit more than 2 weeks away. But, I mean, how long is this going to last? Because that's if we get into a debt limit problem, then we are talking about serious economic calamities all across the country.
Well, that's why Speaker Boehner's original hope was to not do this now over, forgive the Washington speak, the continuing revolution resolution. That was a funny Freudian.
It was for sure, John King.
The continuing resolution, which is to keep the government, you know, up and running because they haven't passed a full budget. He wanted to delay the continuing revolution over to the debt ceiling fight. And so he didn't get his way because there are 30 to 45 members of his conference who won't agree with him. And that's another thing here. Again, the politics of our country are changing before our eyes. And some people mock this Tea Party phenomenon. Again, most of them are people who believe what they're doing and who have been elected and in many cases now reelected. And they go home and they say what they're going to do and people send them here. So you have to respect them. They were elected by people. However, eventually, at some point, you have to figure out if you're the Speaker of the House and your job is to lead your Republican conference, where do you plant the flags? And these guys want to plant the flag on every fight, every issue.
Right.
And as you can see, it's almost impossible to govern in that environment. And so the guy who's got the toughest job in Washington right now is not the president, who we're going to hear from later this hour, but it's John Boehner.
Hey, speaking of John Boehner, here's my analysis, if I can, of what?
Well, we don't know how long it's going to last. I mean, that's the thing that I wanted to ask from John.
Oh, how long is it going to last?
Yeah.
I can't answer the question because normally when you have these things, you sort of see the compromise. You see it out there. Somebody's in a back room talking about it. And you've just got two or three people to, massage their egos or whatever, and you see what it looks like. There is zero. You can't see it right now.
Well, but John, let me tell you where I think I see it. I heard Boehner yesterday say, and I was sort of surprised because I didn't know this is part of the mix, the delay of Obamacare, just like they delayed the employer mandate, and the repeal of the medical device tax, which is costing tens of thousands of jobs. Now, I have no idea if it is causing tens of thousands of jobs. I know a lot of people, Congress people in Massachusetts, want it repealed, too, because it's a pretty important industry here. It seems to me that that's what the president ends up giving the Republicans. Is okay, we'll repeal the medical device tax and we'll live to fight Obamacare or not fight Obamacare another day. Isn't that a plausible out for this?
It is a plausible out, but then you'll have a lot of liberal Democrats who say, we blinked, and don't blink. Leave the Republicans out there on this limb. If we're going to repeal the medical tax, we'll do it in a month, or we'll do it in 6 months, or we'll do it as part of the debt ceiling fight. Like the president says he won't negotiate the debt ceiling. Well, he did in 2011. That's where the sequester came from. And so to do it there. But there's a possible policy solution, you're dead on. That's one where, and then the Republicans could save face by saying, we got something. We got a piece of Obamacare, and now let's move on. The question is, will the Democrats give it to them, and will it be enough? Boehner went back and said, we just got that tax, and he sell it. And if you're Harry Reid and you're thinking, okay, well, I'm going to take a lot of grief if I do this, you're not sure that it's enough. And suppose the Senate passes it after planting their flag and saying, we're not going to negotiate on these issues. This is about just basically keeping the government open. What if the Senate passes it and then the House Tea Party guys say no? So this is the ditch we're in, because Boehner and Reid can't even go into a room, look each other in the eye, like Joe Biden and Mitch McConnell did, by the way. Back the last time.
Sure.
That's probably the one trust relationship left in Washington. They can't look each other in the eye and say, "Let's do this. I promise you, I have the votes, and I promise you, this is it. We're done. We're not going to no more shenanigans." That's the dysfunction of our government, much more than any particular issue or any more particular ideological divide. The trust deficit in this town makes it impossible sometimes to sort of be optimistic that, okay, this is just a little stunt. We're going to get through it.
Well, I'm wondering about the politics of this too, John King, because, right now the polls show that the Republicans are, for most of Americans, are getting more blame for this than the Democrats or than Obama. But you also wonder if that lasts, because Obama, you're reading today and over the weekend that he was out playing golf and he said he's not going to negotiate and he's not going to he's had it with giving in to these different demands. So if he keeps his posture and he doesn't negotiate or doesn't do what Jim just suggested and give them something, a little break in Obamacare, does he keep, keeping most of the country on his side or not?
Well, you make a great point. Look, I think at the moment, and probably no matter how it turns out, the Republicans will suffer more. But everybody's suffering. That's why I said Congress's approval ratings at 10%. More than a third of Americans, I think it's close to 40%, say the president's responsible for this shutdown. So they all suffer individually or collectively by party and personally by title. And then globally, that's all under the umbrella of, do you trust your government? The American people right now don't trust. They think the government would screw up a free lunch, forgive the cliche. And here's another problem for the president. This is about the problem for the president and one of the reasons Republicans bang their heads over why they're doing this. The president's 10 points underwater when it comes to his approval rating. He's a year through the first year of his second term, which is, in history, by historical purposes, the most important year of a second term legislatively to get domestic policy achievements done is the first one. Well, forget about it. It's over. And now we're heading into the midterm election year. And so every second we're talking about this is a second we're not talking about something, and Congress is not acting on something the president wanted to get done. So he's, even if he wins this politically, he's losing from a legacy perspective because he's not getting other things he wants to get done. But here's why Republicans bang their head off the wall. Because the president's 10 points underwater on his approval rating, because independent voters have been leaving the Democrats and the president and moving toward the Republicans, Republicans are watching this balloon fill up for 2014, and they were so full of optimism because everything was moving their way. And now a lot of Republicans think, you know, we've just thrown the president a lifeline. We're gonna help him rescue his own political standing by shutting down the government.
Now, John, we've asked you to make predictions about the political situation. That's the easy part of the day. I know you were hoping you'd avoid this, but I want you to listen to the following, and then we're going to ask you about a prediction. Here it is.
Hanks struck him out. Red Sox win from worst to first in 2013. The AL East belongs to the Boston Red Sox.
Okay, no dilly-dallying, no straddling the fence here. Playoffs start in at 3:05 on Friday, which means, of course, you'll be getting no work done, even if the shutdown is over. What happens to the Red Sox in the playoffs, John King?
At 3:05 on Friday, I'm going to be sitting in a field box at the first baseline. With
are you?
Oh, good
with
for
who?
You.
Yes, with
I am. Yes, I am, sir. This is America. There are things, there are some principles, like I said, there are some principles you have to stand and fight for. I'm actually rooting for the Indians. To come, so that Terry Francona
comes
back to Fenway. I think he's done an amazing job in his first year in Cleveland. So I think it would be great nostalgia if Tito came back and then we beat them in three games. Thank you very much. We don't need to prolong that, and we just move on. I'm rooting for a Red Sox versus Red Sox West Dodgers World Series, so we get to see all those guys come back through again, and Carl Crawford can enjoy left field at Fenway Park. And the Red Sox will win that one in six games.
Okay, fine. So, John, final question for me. You're in the field box and wherever it is, the first baseline. Who are you sitting with? What did you say? Who are you sitting with?
I can't tell you. That's a state secret.
Okay, fine. You're sitting
among my guests will be my son, Noah, who is a junior at Boston College, who is here with me. He's done classes by 2 o'clock on Friday. And
oh, perfect.
Even though he's probably lying to his old man.
Okay, fine. So, John, it's 3 o'clock. You're sitting in the field blocks with Noah and other people. You get a call from your crack producer who says, John Boehner wants to give you an exclusive interview in 5 minutes. What do you do?
I tell him to head to the airport and get on the shuttle, and I'll meet him at Copperfield.
Oh,
hey, John King.
Let's hope he doesn't, John.
Good luck with the shutdown. Good luck with the Red Sox, John King. It's great to talk to you. Talk to you next Tuesday. Thanks.
Take care.
John King is CNN's chief national correspondent. He joins us every Tuesday at noon. Okay, we're opening up the lines to you guys at 877-301-8970. That's 877-301-8970, and our email address, bpr@wgbh.org. Where are you on this whole government shutdown? A new Washington Post ABC poll says that one in every four Americans approves of the federal government shutting down, screeching to a halt. What do you think? 877-301-8970, 877-301-8970. We just got an email from Bob who says, Lilliputians. Can you imagine?
What, the people in Washington?
Yeah, Tip O'Neill allowing a bunch of children to do this to his party and to the country.
By the way, speaking of Tip O'Neill, later this week we'll be joined by a guy who knows Tip O'Neill quite well, and Tip O'Neill's relationship with Ronald Reagan. Chris Matthews will be joining us, has a new book on that relationship. As Marjorie said, 877-301-8970. What's your reaction to this? My sense, totally anecdotal, I haven't seen the same polls you have or the polls that were in the NPR News at the top of the show. My sense is most people are saying, same thing. Is more of the same from these people until there's a direct impact on me. I'm not in Acadia National Park. I'm not planning on going to Yosemite or Faneuil Hall. I think most people say they're little children, Lilliputians, whatever it is. Fifth graders, as John King said.
You know what?
And I think they're what?
I am with John King. I find this very embarrassing. I find it
is embarrassing.
Very, very depressing because I think until very recently, I always thought that when the rubber really is about to hit the road, they're going to behave themselves in Washington and get serious and do what's best for the country and put their reelections and all these kinds of things behind them. And it's clear now that that's just not happening
anymore.
When
you say now, what was the last evidence? By the way, Obamacare, whether you love it or hate it, how many Republican votes did it get?
It got almost none.
But I
think the point is, I think generally we could rise to the occasion and do things. I mean, you found going to war. I mean, you found a lot of Democrats that were very hesitant about Iraq. It was a mistake. But people, you know, did what they thought, in most cases anyway, I mean, to be too much of a Pollyanna, what they thought was the right thing. I don't think that's happening anymore. And that's really depressing for the future of the country.
877-301-8970. In a few minutes, we'll be joined by somebody who's going to explain to you what's going on with those Obamacare exchanges that started today, even though the federal government is partially shut down. Let's start in Framingham with Michael. Michael, you're on Boston Public Radio. Jim and Marjorie. Hey there, Michael.
Good morning, Jim and Marjorie.
Hey.
So I don't remember everybody cracking big tears about the millions that have already lost their jobs in the regular sector or them getting retroactive pay. So with regards to the current government employee base, that has grown remarkably since the recession has happened. It hasn't gone down. It's grown. Maybe we should be looking at cutbacks in personnel if we really don't need them. And I have a friend who works for the government as a government contractor who was told to stay home. And they're not fretting, at least he isn't, about his job. He refers to the current shutdown as a unexpected paid vacation.
Well, by the way, that's what it, as we said, that's what it ended up being in 1995 at the end of that shutdown, which I think is the longest we've ever had, but pretty close to the longest we've ever had, if not the longest. There was a vote to retroactively pay them. And you heard John King say, despite what others are suggesting, it's 110% certainty that they'll get retroactive pay. I have to say, I understand your comparison. I think it's a legitimate one. But these people are just totally blameless here. They're sort of the pawns of this Republican-Democratic back and forth. And I guess the sense is, and I happen to share it, that they shouldn't suffer because of the childish behavior of others. Michael, thank you, though, for the call. 877-301-8970. What's a reaction to the fact the government is partially shut down today on the federal level?
Arnie in Freetown. What do you think, Arnie?
Well, good morning.
Hi, Arnie.
I'm calling from the front line. I work at the Natick Soldier Systems Center, Natick,
Mass. Oh.
We employ about 2,000 people, and we're all at home today, not because we want to be. But we're at home and not getting paid while our elected officials are not working either, but they are getting paid. I just wanted to say that, you know, the impact, people keep saying you're going to feel the impact. And what I think is sad is, you know, at Natick, what we focus on is soldiers. We build body armor. We build protection for soldiers, helmets and things like that. And today we're home and we're not doing our job, and yet we have people volunteering to go in harm's way, and they're not getting what they deserve to be getting.
And Arnie, are you a public employee or you're a private employee?
I'm a civilian employee. I've been there 32 years. I'm a Vietnam veteran, and I'm still there.
And are you, when John King said a little while ago, he didn't say not to worry, but he said 110% likelihood at the end of the day, all of these affected employees will get their money back. Are you as positive about that or no?
I would answer that by saying, show me the money. Yeah. It's almost like the check's in the mail. Fortunately, I'm later on in life and I'm fairly stable, but we have a lot of young people. I'll tell you another one of the side effects real quickly is, since we've had this sequestration where we had days off without pay and we haven't had a pay raise in 2 years, that's okay. I know a lot of people are hurting, but we're losing Natick. You know, the 1,800 people are usually like master's degrees, PhDs, working on high-speed body armor. We're losing those people. Because they're not going to tolerate this. And just in the last 6 months, we've lost a ton of PhDs. And these are the people that are going to be putting the body armor on your brother and your sister and your relatives to go into harm's way. And that's the other effect I don't think people see. I don't want to be little park departments, but it seems like that's all the buzz. The parks are closed. It's more than the parks being closed.
Well, Arnie, you made it very real. Arnie, can you hang on the line 1 second? Our producers want to get your number. We may want to follow up with you after. Thanks so much for the call and broadening the spectrum of impacts for most of us.
Susan is emailing. She says, I think we need term limits, and now I think we need a vote of no confidence. Julie says, I am disgusted. She lists a whole bunch of people that are in terrible need, and she says, we are no longer the greatest nation in the world, not because of average citizens, but because of the idiots we have in Washington. Very sad and wildly embarrassing.
You know, it's one of these things where I was listening to John King, and I agree with him. A lot of the Tea Party people, their view is they were sent there to defund what they consider to be this monstrosity, Obamacare.
The districts are very gerrymandered, too, to make it.
Of course they are, the members of the House, right? You don't have to support or oppose Obamacare. It doesn't matter what side you're on to say what I guess you were intimating before or suggesting overtly. is why can't they cut deals? Why? And by the way, I'm not criticizing or praising the president for refusing to meet or Harry Reid and saying we won't go into a conference committee, we won't negotiate. The fact that grown-ups who run the most powerful nation on the earth can't agree on basics like paying the bills is staggering.
I mean, the other thing is, too, I mean, the cliche, elections matter. Well, Barack Obama just won a second term, and he is the chief proponent of Obamacare. And when these Tea Party people keep talking about the will of the people, the will of the people, they're talking about a much smaller will of the people than the grander will of the people that reelected the guy.
Well, that's why John Boehner has to live by the words he said a couple of months ago when he said, quote, Obamacare is settled. It's the law of the land. And if he allowed the moderate Republicans to join with Democrats and he decided to put the country first, which he's done in the past, by the way, occasionally with his Tea Party membership, then the reality is that this thing would get resolved, but then it would occur again, as you said, on October 17th with the debt ceiling or whatever the next controversial issue is. Janice, you're in Rhode Island. You're next on Boston Public Radio. Thank you so much for the call.
Hi. I wanted to make a couple of comments. The first one really isn't related to this, but it's related to something you, both of you said,
sure,
and John King said. You talked about the sequester, the, you know, not having the skies in fall because of the sequester. But, you know, it's funny because those of us who are not affected by the sequester, people taking airplanes, people like that, we don't feel the impact of it. It's the people who are poor, the people who are dependent on Head Start, the people who, you know, who are least able to speak for themselves or have a voice in our government. They are severely affected by the sequester. And I was actually very surprised that none of you have ever said anything about it or ever picked up on that. It's almost like you're ignoring those people just like everybody else is.
Well, by the way, I think you make a very legitimate point, and you're right. We should focus more. The point that I was, which does not diminish at all what you're saying, the point I was making to John is, King, is since the vast majority of the general public, and I assume we plead guilty here too, haven't focused on what the impacts were. The conventional wisdom is the sequester was no big deal, and you're making the case that it obviously was. And we thank you for adding that to the discussion.
And well, and along that line, you know, right here in Boston, we've got the ABCD, the Action for Boston Community Development, yeah, which is a federal agency which provides, you know, daycare and provides heating assistance and provides help to a lot of single mothers. I mean, they can go on for a few more days, but they can't go on indefinitely. And they're big in affordable housing stuff and free meals and all that. So
are they a federal agency? See, they get a lot of federal dough. I don't. They're
they
not
get a
federally
lot of
federal. Yeah.
The bottom line is they
depend
cannot,
on the federal
exactly,
funds. Right?
They depend on the federal funds, and they cannot go on indefinitely without without the federal government being in session to pay the bills. Let's.
But
go
I'm
to,
glad Janice made that point. We have glossed over some of those impacts, but I think the reality is the vast majority of the general public has glossed over them, and we shouldn't have.
Madeline from Newton, what do you think, Madeline?
I think that Congress should stay home for a couple of days and the national parks and everybody else should go to work. And then when they can come back to the table with something decent and they can all get along. Because
yeah,
I don't think anybody would miss if they didn't come to work for 2 days.
That is a brilliant point, Madeline.
And Madeline, you know what's really annoying about this? You know, the federal workers, the gentleman just called, worried about the people up in Natick, they're going to lose their salaries, but Congress isn't. I mean, how come Congress gets to keep their salaries?
Well, they're working to resolve the crisis.
Yeah, but they're federal workers, aren't they?
They
cut
are.
Off their pay and see how quickly
how
they...
How come they're not required to go on Obamacare?
Well, they should be required to go on Obamacare, and they should knock off their $174,000 while they're holding the rest of the country hostage.
Madeline, fine point. Thank you for the call. We appreciate it. Yeah, we do.
Call. Cindy from Waltham. Hi, Cindy.
Hey, Cindy.
Hi. You know, I just feel like I'm outraged because of these federal workers that aren't able to get paid. Many of these people, they make low salaries. They live paycheck to paycheck. You know, they can't pay their bills. They can't they can't pay their daycare. It's outrageous. And I think, you know, that's an issue that needs to be talked about in addition to national parks and national monuments and things like that. It's these poor, again, it's the middle class. It's the lower middle class that are, you know, feeling the brunt of one-upmanship.
By the way, let me add something to what you're saying, Cindy. Even John King said 110% certainty that they'll get retroactive pay. Mm-hmm. When you don't know that you're going to get retroactive pay, because that's not the law. It's just some say, the historical reality. It doesn't mean you're not living in abject anxiety when you say, not only can I not pay the bills today, if I don't get that retroactive check in a week or a month or whatever, then I am really underwater potentially for a serious amount of time. So the implications of this, despite those of us who are not affected saying, don't worry, you'll get your money back when it's over, are just totally real. And I'm glad you made the point, Cindy.
Well,
thanks.
There are some outliers who are saying the economy is much more fragile now than it was in 1995. So what we did back in 1995 may not necessarily be what we do in 2013.
I want to squeeze one more quick one in because she wants to talk about one other impact of the shutdown that we hadn't touched upon. Sheila, you're in Lincoln. Quickly, if you can, on Boston Public Radio. Hi, Sheila.
Hi.
Hi.
I'd just like to mention the NIH, which is another federally government-sponsored agency, and NIH administrators don't know what's going on with the administration of the current grants. There is scientific and medical research, which is potentially being disrupted by all this. You know, it's, I mean, I do feel very sorry for these people that don't know where their paychecks are coming from, but this also affects everybody in this country, and people are stupid not to realize it.
I think that's a perfect way to end this discussion, at least for this particular segment. Sheila, thank you so much for the call. We appreciate it.
And we have a lot of emailers that point to our other workers. We just don't have time to get to them all. But when we come back, we're going to look at what people across the country are facing today as they shop around for health insurance exchanges in the nicknamed Obamacare. But first, stick around to find out how you can keep conversations like these going on the air right here at 89.7 WGBH.
As a community organizer and politician, Mel King's impact on Boston is ingrained into the history of our city.
When the people organize, get into the street, and are willing to challenge, then change happens.
I'm Adam Riley. Join me for a special conversation with Mel King, Sunday night at 6 here on 89.7 WGBH, Boston Public Radio.
Funding for our programs comes from you and Sullivan Tire and Auto Service, with over 100 master technicians on staff offering brand name tires and parts, committed to serving New England for over 56 years. Information and locations at sullivantire.com. And 4 centuries of Massachusetts Furniture, where you can see extraordinary furniture made in Massachusetts from the 1600s to the present at museums and cultural institutions throughout the state. Details at 4centuries.org.
This is 89.7 WGBH. In this house, we ask a lot of questions.
How does a mayor end the cycle of poverty?
How would you fix the team?
So what should Red Sox fans be concerned about at this point?
And explore a ton of new ideas.
An environmentally friendly battery made from wood.
The revolution will not be televised, but could it be tweeted?
And so I think in 10 or 15 years, nothing is going to be the same.
This is WGBH, your home for public radio. Please support it.
Call 888-897-9424 or do your part online at WGBHnews.org as 89.7 sprints to the finish of our annual fall fundraiser. Good afternoon. I'm Jim Browdy. She is Marjorie Egan. We're joined. We don't see this woman enough. Joined now in studio by WGBH's Amanda Goodwin. It's great to see you, Amanda.
Thanks
Amanda.
So much. It's so great to be here. It is. It's the annual fall fundraiser. Can you believe it? It's finally here. Oh, yeah. So pumped. Look,
I believe it.
In all seriousness, well, the on-air fundraising is definitely not what you come here for. It is what fuels all the stuff you do come here for, which is the really great conversations that we're having today. You can get involved with a quick call to 888-897-9424 or help keep programs just like this one on the air when you give online at WGBHnews.org.
So the big story of the day, the government shutdown. All afternoon and for the rest of the day, 89.7 will be covering the story of the government shutdown, giving you insights, leading conversations, asking questions. That is what you expect from public radio, and you've come to expect it because hundreds of thousands of listeners across New England continue to support it, and I hope you can be one of them today.
888-897-9424 is the phone number. A really easy way to remember that. 888-897-WGBH. Also good online, WGBHnews.org. And you know, on a day like this when the news is heavy and the conversation is really rich, sometimes you need something a little light to balance your day out.
Like what?
Like tickets to go see Elton John for his only Boston performance.
Well,
how about that?
Good, yeah.
That's pretty good. We're having a little Almost Famous moment here. I can hear Tiny Dancer.
So, love that movie.
Oh, I can quote it forwards, backwards, but that's for another story. right now what the story is that for a gift in absolutely any amount, whether you can swing $10 a month, $1,000 a year, $100 a year, no matter how much you give right now, you will be automatically entered into a drawing to win two of the best seats in the house to catch Elton John for his only Boston performance. He's going to be performing at the TD Garden on November 12th at 8 o'clock. We've got seats in the first front rows. The only way to get them is to make a gift right now. Of course, a gift isn't necessary to enter, but we sure appreciate it. Here's the phone number, 888-897-9424 or online WGBHnews.org.
So however you can help this afternoon, I promise it'll make a big difference. Your support is what keeps news, stories, and good conversation going here in Boston and all over and beyond Boston. Remember, right now during Boston Public Radio, a gift in absolutely any amount will get you in on that drawing to score two seats right up front to Elton John's only Boston show at the TD Garden on November 12th. Here's the number, 888-897-9424, 888-897-9424, or get involved by clicking the orange donate button at WGBHnews.org.
This is Robert Siegel of NPR's All Things Considered, urging you to help spread the word online at the new WGBHnews.org. If you go online, you can hear the latest local reports from Boston Public Radio, and you can write about why you've decided to get involved. What you write might end up on the air. For example, Alexandra from Dudley says, "I am a much more informed person because of public radio." Allison in Littleton says, "My five-year-old son said that it was really important." And Micah in Newport says, "You give me the news without giving me a headache." More NPR news, more local conversations, less ibuprofen. Let the station know why you count on Boston Public Radio when you call 888-897-9424 or leave a note when you give online at WGBHnews.org. Thank you.
Welcome back to Boston Public Radio. Jim Browdy, Marjorie Egan. Today, I assume you know, marks the launch of the Obamacare insurance exchanges. People are shopping around for health insurance are likely to find this is a little bit more complicated than the kind of online shopping Marjorie and I are used to. Joining us to talk through what consumers are facing today, what they need to know, is Trudy Lieberman. Trudy's a health reporter and contributing editor to the great Columbia Journalism Review. Trudy, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Hi, Trudy.
Hi.
So you wrote a terrific and actually crystal clear piece on untangling Obamacare, the steps you go through. And even with your crystal clear explanation, I had a headache, like by the third paragraph. How are people going to be doing this today, and where do they go to do it?
Okay, well, the first thing is they don't have to do it today. They have really 6 months. The open enrollment period goes until March 31st, and coverage doesn't begin until January 1st. So they have at least 3 months before they are going to get any benefits. So they shouldn't go out and cancel the policies they have right now, that's for sure. And I would urge people to take a lot of time in examining what's available to you on the exchanges. As you noted, it's hard work.
Yeah.
And very well may give you a headache, and you may need to take several days and a lot of aspirin to kind of figure this thing out.
But, and Trudy, where are the places they can go to figure it out? We know online. Can they go to an office? Can they call a phone number? What are the forums? What are the places where they can get information and ultimately make decisions?
Well, there's a system of, certainly they can go to the federal government's website, and the states that are not running their own exchanges, that's where people will go to gain entry into what's offered in their own state. But most states, in fact, all of them, are supposed to have navigators, and these navigators are real people who will sit down with them and help them work through the process and actually input the information online and help them see what their choices are. And the real question that people have is whether there's going to be a sufficient number of navigators. There's not a lot of federal money appropriated for this. And as a result, some states aren't going to have very much. And in states like Ohio, where they have a lot of uninsured people, there are some parts of the state that may not have any navigators.
And a navigator is a person with whom you can actually sit down face to face and have a conversation, and he or she will be able to answer your questions, theoretically, correct?
Correct. That's right.
Now, but let's assume as step one, as you say, it doesn't have to be today, but the six-month window opens today. You go online to find out what your options are. Tell us as in as detailed fashion as you can, what do people see on the screen? What's before them?
Well, they're going to have to input a lot of information. And I think in that article you referenced, I pointed out there's sort of a lot of mechanics that have to happen.
Yeah.
And a lot of things that will happen sort of behind the scenes before you even get to the point of enrolling. And I think that the key thing is that people need to find out pretty quickly whether they are eligible for a subsidy. We think that about 60% of the people who will shop in the exchanges will be eligible, but it's important to point out that some 40% will not be eligible for a subsidy, which means that they're going to have to pay the whole premium themselves. For people who are eligible for the subsidies are much greater for those who have very low incomes and not very great for those at the high end of the income ladder that's used in this case. So once that's determined then by the computer's alchemy, people will have to decide at that point if they are eligible for a subsidy. When do they want it taken? Do they want it applied every month to their premium, or do they want to wait until the very end of the year and get it back as a tax refund? This is a tax credit, an advanced tax credit, and so people will at the very end of the tax year have to reconcile all this with Uncle Sam. And if you get too large a subsidy, you'll have to pay some of it back. If you don't get enough, you may get a surprise.
But is it Trudy, did I read in one of your pieces on this today, and if not, it was, well, I think it was yours, that with the subsidy amount that comes up on your screen may not actually be the level of subsidy to which you're entitled, meaning you may get information that's inaccurate. Was that you?
Well, it may not be accurate depending on what your income and how it will vary over the year, because a lot of people shopping in this market have they don't have steady income. They have very variable income. And so as that, you know, when you go and sign up, you make your best guess. And nobody's really going to be checking that. But at the end of the tax year, they are going to be checking that. And if you guess wrong and you've made too much money and they've given you too much subsidy, you're going to have to pay that back.
We're talking with Trudy Lieberman. She's a health reporter and contributing editor to the Columbia Journalism Review, where she wrote this great piece about untangling Obamacare, which I had difficulty untangling because I'm not a very good untangler of these kinds of things. But I was just thinking, Trudy, you know, when you work for a large company, what you mostly do is you go in, when you get hired, you go in to talk to the human resources person, and you sort of tell them your situation. You got kids, you're divorced, you're single, whatever.
We did it here when we started.
Yes. And then they say, well, this is probably the best plan for you. And then you say, okay, that's what I'm going to do. I guess I don't understand how regular people, some of whom aren't even very good with computers, are going to be able to get through this without making a big, huge mistake, which could end up costing them a fortune.
Well, I think that's right. And I just talked to a woman I have been dealing with and have written about for a story for CJR. And she tells me she's just signing up right away. And I said, well, you haven't even looked at this yet. She says, I want to dump the policy that I have. I'm chomping at the bit to sign up. So I asked her what kind of policy it was. And she said, well, it was a silver plan that pays 70%. I said, does that, you understand, you're going to have to pay 30% of the medical costs yourself in various forms, like either high coinsurance, which is a percentage of the bill that you have to pay. And those percentages on these policies are high. 30, 40, 50% of the bill you're going to get stuck with, or a very high deductible. And so I think people may be lulled into selecting something with a very low premium. And here I would caution people to be very careful, because in insurance, a low premium generally doesn't mean a lot of coverage.
Right.
The better the benefits, the more you pay.
Or you may have health insurance, and the bad news is you can't afford to use it because of copays, deductibles, that sort of thing. You know, Trudy, I want to add one layer to what Marjorie said about lack of understanding, potentially confusion, which you agreed with. I've said this to everybody with whom we've spoken, an ethicist from NYU yesterday, and so the issue that concerns me the most, when there was deregulation in things like phones and airlines and that sort of thing, we were all told about all the great choices. Most of us, myself included, had absolutely no idea what we were doing and what we were choosing. this decision is so much deeper and more emotional and much more intimate. The average person, even if they understand what's on the screen, they're making decisions about care for their kid, their spouse, their sick, whatever. I mean, it's a high mountain to climb, isn't it?
It's an extraordinary high mountain to climb. And the other thing that people are asked to do, and this doesn't exist in buying a cell phone or going to Paris on Travelocity's website, it is you are being asked to think about the unknown.
Exactly.
You have to judge the risk. What are your health risks going to be for the following year? And, you know, unless you have a chronic condition where you know your expenses are fairly predictable, you don't know what is going to befall you or your family. Your kid might break a leg playing football tomorrow, and you're going to be stuck with a big bill. Or you may have some heart attack, or, you know, something could come up. And I think that we don't like to think about that, and we really can't. We're not good at judging risk. But insurance is all about risk, and in this decision, you're going to have to think about my risks and my trade-offs. Do I want to pay a higher premium now for, say, a gold policy and have more things covered if I do get sick? Or do I want to take a chance that I'm not going to get sick and get the cheapy bronze policy premium, pay that, and if something goes wrong, you know, then I'm kind of stuck.
Well, Trudy Lieberman, I know you're not a political analyst, but you just mentioned the Travelocity analogy, and Kathleen Sebelius, who, of course, is the Secretary of Health and Human Services, actually said that signing up was like buying a ticket from Travelocity, which clearly it isn't. So you wonder why, you know, predict this sort of ease when you're faced with really a very complicated deal here. It's another misstep by the Obama administration in explaining this accurately.
I don't think this law has ever been really explained very well to people. I think the administration has really not brought people along, or else we wouldn't be seeing some of the backlash today and the poll results we're getting, where people don't really, half the people don't support the law and a lot of people don't understand it. I think that they do bear a lot of the responsibility, and the Secretary of Health and Human Services did indeed say that. And they're faced with a bit of a problem now. They've got to get a lot of people into these exchanges, particularly young, healthy ones. Otherwise, this thing won't work. So you know the people who are going to sign up are people who are sick and
right.
need the coverage. And so to balance that out, they need a lot of the young, healthy people, particularly men, to come into the system and balance things out. This is private insurance we're talking about here, not a national health program.
Hey, Trudy, last thing from me. Massachusetts is in a slightly different spot, or maybe a dramatically different spot than the other 49. Obviously, we have what some like to call Romney Care. We have universal health insurance in the state. How does that affect what happens as of this morning vis-a-vis exchanges? Do we have them in Massachusetts? Who does it apply to? What's the deal here?
I assume the people in Massachusetts will still be buying their policies through the connector.
Mm-hmm.
People who are uninsured, there's not very many people anymore in Massachusetts uninsured, but I think that they will continue to buy through the connector. I think the real problem in Massachusetts continues to be the high cost of care there and the affordability of the coverage.
Hey, I want to wrap this up, though, with I want to put advice in your mouth, and please correct me if you disagree with it. After having spoken to you and read your terrific stuff, which people should Google, by the way.
It is great. You did a
Trudy
great
Lieberman,
job.
It's as clear as an unclear thing can get. It seems to me the goal is to get to a navigator. If you're a person who's going to
Absolutely.
Be going on the exchanges, read what you can, consult what you can, but ultimately your goal, assuming your state has one or has some, is to sit down with what you're calling a navigator, a human being who can go through the pros and cons and help you with a comparative analysis. Is that a safe statement?
Absolutely. I couldn't agree with that more. I mean, the way I learned insurance was by sitting down with insurance company officials and making them explain it to me.
Yep.
That's the only way.
And the only other thing I can think of, if you're willing to give us your cell phone number, we can have uninsured
can call
people
you.
Just call you, Trudy. Is that? Hey, Trudy Lieberman, that was really helpful. Thank
yeah.
you so much for your time.
Yeah, I think if you're going to go on one of those navigators, you better take 3 days off from work to get there.
Trudy, thank you so much. We appreciate it.
Thanks, Trudy.
Thank you.
Trudy Lieberman is a health reporter and contributing editor to the the Columbia Journalism Review. Trudy, again, thanks for joining us.
Now, before you say what's coming up, I want to just tie up a couple of loose ends from the last couple of days. We asked Trudy, who's totally down the middle, about her analysis of how this has been explained. She says she thinks the Obama administration hasn't done a terribly good job. We've echoed that. We've gotten a lot of email criticizing us for having said that. Feel free when the lines are open at some point in the next few days if you disagree to tell us. And secondly, we got a bunch of emails yesterday and tweets and other things suggesting that one of our guests misrepresented the position of Warren Buffett when he said that he thought that they should start all over. He was against Obamacare. We checked it out. And the truth is that statement was made, that start all over was made in 2010 in an interview that Warren Buffett gave when Obamacare was not yet the law. But he went on to say, while he suggested the president whom he supports should start all over, if the choice is between starting all over and dealing better with cost control or signing Obamacare as drafted into law as it is, I will choose Obamacare as it is. So that's the deal on Warren Buffett, and thanks for your emails.
Yeah, we have another email from Bill telling us what we need to do here is put on our big boy pants, Jim, and act like grown-ups. And if we believe the HR person about our insurance, then we deserve what we get.
Actually, we're doing quite well. Thank you very much.
Sympathy for the confusion. Anyway, when we come back, it's time for a special edition of Open Mic. We're talking to the gubernatorial candidates today. It is Attorney General Martha Coakley. But before we hear from the Attorney General, stick around to learn more about what you can do to keep conversations like that with the Attorney General and everybody else, such as Martha Coakley, on public radio.
If you're a professional hacker, what do you suppose the best way is to show off your work to a potential client?
People have gotten up, stopped the meeting, and said, quote, you've gone too far, you know? We've stolen plans for military equipment.
I'm Kai Rizdal, Hackers for Hire, next time on Marketplace. That and the numbers from Wall Street as well. It's from APM.
Tonight at 6, here on WGBH Radio.
WGBH programs exist because of you. And the Massachusetts Teachers Association, reminding you that learning doesn't just happen in the classroom. It happens all day, every day. Working together, parents and teachers can make this a successful school year for every child in Massachusetts. And Latino Americans, actor Benjamin Bratt narrates the rich and varied history of America's largest minority group and examines how they shaped the nation. Latino Americans concludes Tuesday at 8 on WGBH 2.
This is 89.7 WGBH. In this house, a good laugh is always appreciated.
I'm calling from Ridgecrest.
Oh, wow.
Mojave Desert.
Mojave Desert. And what do you do there?
I look for work.
Atta girl.
And every now and then, so is a good cry.
He had brain cancer, and I went up to him, and I'm like, I know you're scared, but you gotta believe that you can make it.
This is WGBH, your home for public radio. Please support it.
There you go, John.
So you call 888-897-9424. You pitch in line at online at WGBHnews.org. I am Jim Browdy. She is Marjorie Egan. Hello there, Marjorie.
Hello, Jim.
You're listening to WGBH's Boston Public Radio at a very important time. It's our annual fall fundraiser. That's when we rally support to keep programs like this one, which we hope you like, on the air with more. Here's our colleague, WGBH's Amanda Goodwin. Hey, Amanda.
Hey, so glad to be here. It is a beautiful day out in Boston with lots to talk about, and we're talking about it here on Boston Public Radio because over the years, hundreds of thousands of New Englanders have pitched in support to keep WGBH going, which actually started on this very radio station. You might know WGBH for television, but the whole thing got started here on 89.7 in October of 1951. So if you can help keep it going strong right now, that'd be awesome. Let me give you the phone number. It's 888-897-9424. You can also support this program and everything WGBH does at WGBHnews.org.
So throughout the morning and the rest of today, you'll hear reports and updates on the government shutdown. It happened at midnight, just a little more than 7 hours ago. When news happens, you can trust 89.7 to keep you connected to what's going on. You trust us to provide a broad look and a laser focus on how things will affect us here in Boston, across Massachusetts, and all around New England. Your support is absolutely critical to maintaining maintaining this connection and delivering the news you need when you need it.
You know, it's likely on-air fundraising isn't your favorite part of public radio. I happen to love it, by the way. Fortunately, there's a really easy way to get less of this and more of what you love. And what you do is you sign on as a WGBH sustainer. It's really easy. You break down your gift into monthly installments, which automatically renew. That automatic renewal helps WGBH plan better, and better plans mean fewer fundraisers. Again, you call 888-897-9424 or you become a sustainer online at WGBH.org.
Yes, fewer sustainers. That means less of Amanda, more of Jim and Marjorie, what everybody really wants. And if you can become a sustainer right now for just $12 a month, that automatically renews. We'll say thanks in a really special way. You'll receive a DVD and CD copy of Elton John's latest concert. It's going to be premiering actually here on WGBH television on Saturday night. And because we are both public radio and public television, the only way to get that DVD is actually to make a gift right here. You can't buy it on Amazon. You can't get it in stores. It's an exclusive PBS offer. And again, because we are both television and radio here at WGBH, that sustaining gift of just $12 a month is going to get you Elton John's newest DVD and CD. The CD is called Diving Board. It's a perfect gift for you or for somebody else. And in addition to getting that exclusive DVD and CD for that sustaining gift of $12, you will also be entered into a contest to win a pair of tickets, a couple of seats right up front to Elton John's concert on November 12th. It's happening down at the TD Bank North Garden.
So please help out however you can this afternoon. Every single dollar you give will help keep programs like this one on the air, and Jim and I would very much appreciate that, and keep you and your community connected to the news and to each other. Remember, for a gift in any amount, you'll automatically be entered to win two tickets right up front to Elton John's only Boston show at the TD Garden on November 12th. Call November 12th. Yeah, I got that right. 888-897-9424, 888-897-9424, or get involved online at WGBHnews.org.
Hi, it's Steve Inskeep with Morning Edition from NPR News with a little bit of history. In October of 1951, the WGBH Educational Foundation started with this radio station. Since then, it's been joined by Classical New England and WCAI on the Cape and Islands. In 1955, WGBH Television started, and it's contributed many well-respected programs to the world, including The French Chef, Masterpiece Theater, This Old House, and Nova. It all started with this radio station, and here is where it continues. It all happens because you support it. Talk is cheap. Listening is priceless, and it happens because of you. Please help continue this valuable work by making a gift. Call 888-897-9424 or give online at WGBHnews.org. Thanks.
Welcome back to Boston Public Radio. The person who said she felt at home was our guest. You know, it's open mic, special edition. Charlie Baker used to join us every Tuesday at around this time, but then he jumped into the governor's race. We've decided to turn this mic over to the other candidates. So far, we've spoken to Juliette Kayyem, Don Berwick, Joe Avalone. Today, we are joined by the latest person to join the Democratic field. That would be Attorney General Martha Coakley. Attorney General, it's great to see you.
So good afternoon. It's great to see you both.
Well, thank you for being here, Attorney General Coakley. Now, here, as you know, Jim asks everyone incessantly, so you're going to run for governor, you're going to run for United States Senate, you're going to run for governor. He's asked you probably a million times if you're going to run for governor.
So now he has
for
his
governor.
Answer.
Well, you weren't going to run for governor because you talked about how much you loved the job, so the attorney general's job. So obviously something changed. What happened?
Well, I do love the attorney general's job, and I love the stuff we've been able to do. But we do have an empty corner office come 2014. And as I've thought about the reasons I've always done the work I do in public service, keeping kids safe, you know, helping move our economy along, all of those things made me decide that it was important that we have a good governor. I think everybody would like that. And I wanted to get into the race to talk about keeping the economy moving for everybody, not just for people at the top, and to make sure that we are able to modernize our schools, that our kids get the best education. But more importantly, we work with them and our businesses to make sure that everybody who wants a job is going to get the kind of training, workforce training, to do that. There's a lot of work to do. And I'm prepared to roll up my sleeves and start talking to folks about whether I would be the best candidate and best governor for Massachusetts.
Martha Kogi, have you done one interview since you announced where someone has not said how horrible your campaign was against Scott Brown? Have you done one?
Probably not.
Well, let me tell you what
so
my view is.
So will this be one?
No, it won't. Because let me tell you, I think I may surprise you here. The conventional wisdom is Charlie Baker, who's the likely Republican nominee, horrible against Deval Patrick. You, horrible. If I hear the Fenway thing one more time, I'm going to scream. Do you honestly believe? It seems to me Scott Brown was a really good candidate you ran against. Deval Patrick was a really good candidate that Charlie Baker ran against. I've read you say, I know I made mistakes, it's in your video, I'm going to do things differently. Do you really think you ran a rotten campaign, or was that just the conventional wisdom which you have to buy into to put that behind you?
Well, I think there are a lot of factors, but the first one for me was to acknowledge we made mistakes, I made mistakes, and look, I've learned from them, Jim. I got right back to work, and I've run again. I've run statewide since then successfully, and I do think that people who run and who lose, you learn more sometimes.
What'd you learn? What are the other than the Fenway thing, which has become part of the literature of the time?
And I was outside Fenway, you know.
We saw you outside Fenway, shaking hands.
Yes,
so
we did.
What are the things you learned from when you ran against Brown for the Senate that you were either correcting or doing differently this round, Martha?
Well, I learned in a special election, for instance, that, you know, time is compressed. You have to focus on doing a lot of things at the same time, and maybe you don't do them all as well as you should, keeping touch with people, you know, doing the meeting with the activists and working the retail piece of it, being out talking to folks, you know. And I look forward to this race because this is an opportunity with a longer race. And I've already gotten a great start talking to people who are active in the Democratic Party and talking in the out on the street, as I did for 3 days all over Massachusetts. And people are interested in this. They want a good governor. They've got a lot of good ideas about where we should go. And I'm learning a lot being on the road.
You know, you said in your announcement, I know what it's like to lose a race. I know how hard it is. And then you said, but it's nothing compared to what so many people go through every day in their lives. But I remember thinking, and I've known you for a while, you know, if somebody was on Saturday Night Live saying I was the worst columnist in the history of the United States of the world, I mean, I'd be under a rock
somewhere. Did you miss that show, Marjorie, when they did that?
I probably did. No one told me. He said, no, I'd be poised in the corner of the Tobin Bridge. But I mean, how did you manage that? Because that is hard. It wasn't just in Massachusetts. It was the whole country, really. Did you, like, go to a spa for a couple of days? Or did you just, you know, take the dogs for a walk? I know you lost one of your dogs.
Well, I did take the dogs for a walk.
How did you deal with that? How did you come back?
Well, what I actually did was get back to work, frankly. And I have jokingly said, look, how else was I going to get on Saturday Night Live, right? I think it's a great badge of honor. And I got back to work to do the kinds of things that I run for office for. You know, in the great work we've done in the AG, keeping people in their homes, you know, fighting the big banks, making sure that we pass a human trafficking bill, making sure, and this is what drives me to do the work we get to do. And so I learned that in that race, that people want to see that, they want to hear it. And I think they want to see and hear that in a governor, and I'm prepared to do that. I know I'm going to make up some ground, but I'm moving ahead, and I'm going to roll up my sleeves and meet everybody who's interested in where Massachusetts is going.
One last thing about the last race.
I'm not done with the last race.
For me, anyway. It's one of the things I've always told people when we've talked about this last race is that they forget that you won the primary by, I believe, 20 points.
19.
Okay, 19. So 19 points is a big win. Michael Capuano, a very capable candidate, you beat him. So you came out of this very strong. And I think there was such a shock that a Republican even had a chance for what we used to call Ted Kennedy's seat before Scott Brown said it's the people's seat. That was one of his best lines in that campaign. That had to be part of it, that the expectation that a Republican state senator had no chance.
Sure. And I think that a lot of elections and people's perceptions are about expectations. And that's why, you know, I'm starting this with none. I have no expectations except that I'm going to work really hard, because I do think that people do pay attention to why you're running, what you care about, what you do. And I'm really proud of my record, the things we've done in the AG's office, you know, keeping health care costs down, making sure that people, you'd spend a lot of time talking about the Affordable Care Act, making sure that people can afford their health care here and making sure that we keep those options. We've done a lot of work on that. I can continue to do that as governor. By the way, that's one of the reasons that we will help businesses stay here, because we can keep health care costs down, we'll keep energy costs down, we'll create the kind of climate that businesses will stay here, grow here, and we'll create the kind of education system that'll give them the workers. That's what people in Massachusetts want. That's why I do the work I've done in public service. That's why I ran again for AG, and that's why I'm running for governor.
So far this interview, for the 7 minutes we've been together, we asked petty questions about campaigning, and you
and
segue
I've been smiling
into
the whole
policy.
Way.
issues. Through it.
Here's the last one, and then we are going to get to some policy stuff. I mentioned the Fenway thing before, which I think was horribly overdone. But in any case, not by you, but by us in the media playing it forever. However, Scott Lehi from The Globe wrote a piece about your kickoff, where you're going to get, you know, down with the people, that sort of thing, a new era. And he writes this piece where you're supposed to go. Is it called Dempsey's, the little lunch place in your hometown of Medford?
Coffee breakfast spot in Medford.
Whatever it is. And he says, and what happens? Martha Coakley goes to the door of some pizza joint by mistake, and he doesn't say this, but thus proving she really doesn't go to those places. What's the truth of that little episode?
Well,
there?
Two things. Dempsey's is on the other side of town, I have to tell you. It's, you know, East Medford.
And you're on the other side.
And I'm on the other side. And the truth is that as we were walking in, we had a gaggle. We had a lot of people, a lot of cars. I saw some folks that I was meeting there who were over that way. So I walked over. I thought they were beckoning me, so I went over to see them. But it was no more or less than that. And so we walked into Dempsey's. And by the way, I had a great reception in Dempsey's.
How's the food there?
Food. Didn't have any.
You did? That morning,
I had coffee.
But?
And my husband had a muffin. And it was made on the premises, and he swears by it.
Speaking of your husband, in terms of changes, at least my analysis as an outsider here, I've met your husband a lot of times, usually when he accompanies you to a studio. Former cop, but very low profile in your former campaigns. He was out there that first day. Is that a change that you and your family have consciously decided to make, that your husband is going to be an active part of this campaign, Martha Coakley?
Absolutely. And we talked a lot this summer about what the race would mean and everything that we would have to do together. And I said, look, I'd like to do this, but I'm not doing it unless you want to do it and you think we should do it. And he has been gung-ho. He's been out with me. He's enjoying it. He sends off to the family, you know, his little observations about what's happening on the campaign trail. And he's in this race and he's enjoying it.
Okay, you mentioned the economy. It's one of the first things you said today, not just for the people at the top, and I'm paraphrasing, but for everybody else as well, make it work for them. Give us a couple of concrete things that you do as governor to make it work for the middle class and for the working poor.
Sure. Well, Wall Street is doing very well, and we're in a good position to see that. We're still fielding phone calls every day from people who are about to be foreclosed upon. And let me give you one quick other example, Jim. I don't know if you guys have talked about it or seen it, but we've got a real crisis coming with flood mortgage insurance right on the horizon because FEMA is redoing the maps across the country.
Federal Emergency Management, yeah.
Yes, including in Massachusetts. And they are taking away the subsidy that they now get so that people's flood insurance is affordable. And I spent Saturday morning down in Scituate with about 220 people, many of whom are going to have their homes foreclosed upon because they will not be able to go from $800 a year to $20,000
a year.
$20,000? The numbers on this, Marjorie, are astounding. And I know our congressional folks are working on it with FEMA. We're working on it at the state level and with the local folks. But that's the kind of thing when the federal government or a big corporation does something because maybe because they're too big to care. I don't know. But they do stuff that affects people every single day. We're the ones who step in and try and make that work. And just when people are coming around, I think, holding on to their homes, maybe building a little equity, we get another thing like this. And so we need to make sure that when Congress acts or agencies act or the state acts or the economy turns around on Wall Street, that people in the middle class who want to build equity, want to send their kids to college, are going to be able to continue to do it. And never forgetting the poorest folks, the people who are at the bottom, that sometimes, you know, you think this battle is about the haves and the have-mores. You know, no one pays attention sometimes to the homeless, to people, to our veterans. I mean, I think it's a disgrace we have veterans in Massachusetts who are homeless, who suffer from mental illness, who don't get attention. All of those
things. What can the state do about that? I mean, that's a huge part of the responsibility there of the feds. And if they're not meeting their responsibility. What can the state do in tough fiscal times, Martha Coakley?
Well, I think that we have to make those decisions about what is a society we care about, we will invest in. Education is obviously one of them. Caring for people and health care is obviously one. We have to make it work and we'll find ways to do it.
We're talking with Martha Coakley. She is Attorney General of the Commonwealth. She is also running on the Democratic ticket for Governor of the Commonwealth. You know, you just mentioned education, and I don't think I've ever asked you about education, which I am obsessed with because I think that things are not going well in the public schools, particularly in urban areas. So where are you on some of these so-called hot-button issues like charter schools or merit pay for teachers or moving away from some of the union rules to be able to experiment more in the public schools?
Well, let me say, first of all, I'm a big believer in having an extended school day. I think we've seen that work. We are about to do that. I think it's most people agree we have to find a way to keep kids in school for longer periods of time for learning, but all, look at the other benefits you get. You get the afternoon time when kids get into trouble or unwanted pregnancies, or you free up parents who are always worrying about daycare.
Right.
You know? And I also think we need to think about changing the system so that we don't have kids out in time to do the planting and then come back after the harvest. I mean, we have a school system built on an agrarian schedule, and we could do better, particularly with kids who may struggle in math or English. They may be up to speed in June, and then they're off for, you know, 2.5+ months, it's harder for them to catch up. So we need to modernize what we do in terms of teaching, the way we live, what we know. And I think that some of the charter schools have been great. We need that kind of innovation. They also need to be accountable because some of them haven't done so well with their finances. So we need to be, I think, with the teachers' unions. I think people go into teaching because they want to teach. That's great. And people join unions because they want the economic security of it. I don't have a problem with that. And I think that we will figure out with all of our unions in Massachusetts. They all live in the communities. Most of them live where they work. They live in the state. We'll figure out how to make this happen.
So merit pay wouldn't be something that you would find attractive?
No, I'm not against the concept of it, but let's talk about it for a minute. It depends on what you mean by that. Because, you know, if you have kids who aren't good students, you know, why should you be disadvantaged if you teach at a school where maybe you're in a Tonier zip code and the kids have better help at home? They're going to be better students. So that's an easier job. Maybe we should merit pay for the teachers who teach in the tougher schools where the kids are farther behind, who need more work. So let's talk about how we provide the right incentives for teachers to join the profession. I'd love to see young men and women coming out of college thinking about teaching, something that's so important that we say is important. We usually give lip service to it.
Can we change to a totally different topic? The Civil Liberties Unions of Massachusetts and Florida approached not the attorney general in Florida, but some county attorney and you, and said Ibrahim Todashev was killed by the FBI in his apartment in Orlando. And for those who don't remember Todashev, he's the one who allegedly was about to sign a confession saying that he and the older Tsarnaev brother were responsible for the unsolved triple murder in Waltham on 9/11/11,
yes.
That kind of thing.
Yes.
He was shot dead. And as you know, there's been very little out of the FBI. Stories have changed, what he had or didn't have, what he leaped at the FBI agent with or didn't leap. They requested that you, since you had taxpayer-funded troopers there, Massachusetts taxpayer-funded troopers, in the apartment at some time during this discussion with Ibrahim Todashev, that you conduct an investigation. By the way, that came after a New York Times story that showed in 150 incidents where the FBI had investigated itself in shootings or other harm done to suspects, they cleared themselves 150 out of 150 times. But you, Martha Coakley, said, and I don't want to put words in your mouth, you refused to do it. Why did you refuse to do it?
Well, I didn't refuse to do it. I simply don't have the authority or jurisdiction. Let me just say this, Jim. If that had happened when I was DA and DAs do the investigations around homicide, if we had that happen in Middlesex County when I was DA, I would have done that investigation. So I was glad to hear that the Florida district attorney, who does have jurisdiction and the ability to review that, said he is undertaking that investigation. I know there's great concern about that. The FBI has said they're doing a review. I assume that's got to be made available, will be made available to the DA, who's also doing that investigation. And, you know, if people are not satisfied with the results of that, then we'll see what other options we
have. What other options? I mean, my recollection, I could be wrong, that there was a matter out of Detroit where the authorities comparable to you were unhappy with the FBI's investigation of a shooting there. I could be wrong. You're looking at me like I could be. And
I'm just not familiar with
it. Okay, but your view is that you don't have the power to do what you were requested to do. Is that why you didn't do it?
Basically, yes, because an action takes place on property somewhere, and you know the district attorney in Boston doesn't have authority in Middlesex. I don't have authority in the state of Florida to review what's potentially a criminal act.
But how about even questioning your own state troopers about what happened there? Even if you don't investigate, just debriefing them about what they saw. Were they there at the time of the shooting? Was he about to sign a confession?
You shouldn't assume that has not been done, not necessarily by me, but by other authorities in Massachusetts.
But I guess that's the thing that I think is so hard for me and a lot of other people to understand. We had two Massachusetts state troopers down there when this young man was shot. We don't even know how many times he was shot. We still haven't gotten any information about that. So I guess I don't understand why we haven't had some statement made public either through your office or through the state police to say at least that we have questioned these troopers and to explain why were they there and why were they there? We don't even know why they were there.
No, we know why they were
there. Why were they there?
My understanding, and I don't have any insider information, but Jim just said, they were down investigating what happened in that triple murder in Waltham and thought that there may be some connection with what happened that day, with what happened with the marathon bombings. So this is a U.S. attorney's investigation. It's a federal investigation out of Boston. It is a Middlesex district attorney's investigation on the homicide. So I find it a little bit unusual that everybody's saying, why isn't the attorney general doing something?
Do you mean that Carmen Ortiz, the U.S. attorney here, you think would have jurisdiction to investigate this?
I can't answer that.
Or are you talking about the district attorney that oversees Waltham?
No, I'm just saying that of all the people who might be able to do those reviews, and my guess is they would have an interest in it. It's an investigation of a federal case with a connection to a state case, neither of which I am involved in as an investigator. But the FBI will have to make its report available. The DA down there, who does have jurisdiction, said he is doing a review of it. So you will hear the results of this.
Well, let me ask you one more thing, Martha Coakley. You were the district attorney of Middlesex County. Were this a case in your jurisdiction as a district attorney, would you think it would be an appropriate place for you to be letting the public know what the heck was going on?
Not before the investigation is completed. And that's where I know everybody's anxious. But it is standard, whether it's Massachusetts, federal, or FBI, when there is a police involved shooting, that investigation is done. The results are not made public in real time as it's going on. It will be made public when it's finished. And I hope and trust that that will happen.
Martha, we're talking to Martha Coakley, Attorney General and Democratic candidate for the nomination to succeed Deval Patrick. One last thing about marathon-related thing. We've had this discussion with Deval Patrick and a whole host of other people. Based upon the initial testimony that Ed Davis gave in front of Congress, based upon what Bill Congressman Keating said when he came back from his trip to Russia, suggesting that there were warning signs that our law enforcement, not ours, Massachusetts, federal, missed or screwed up, do you accept the notion that it is possible that had everybody done their job properly prior to April 15th, that the marathon bombings could have been prevented?
I think that's totally speculative, Jim. I agree that you always need to look back and say, what did we miss? What did we have? But I don't know the extent of the information or the files or the dot connecting they make. And so that's a fair question, perhaps, but I can't really answer that one.
Martha,
I think
Coakley,
we need to look at it.
A conversation we've had, the two of us have had with you, I've had with you individually, there is virtually no state in America that has a worst record of electing women to executive positions. The only woman who's ever, I think, is Shannon O'Brien and you, are the only two people, women, have ever been elected to constitutional office in their own right?
No. Lieutenant Evelyn Murphy
well,
won
I mean,
as
well,
a
so is
lieutenant
Jane Swift,
governor.
But she was part of the package with
no,
the...
No, but she was elected as a lieutenant governor. I mean,
on
she
her own.
On her own with
no, they're elected. They're elected as part of the part of the governor they're running with. What in any case? Why do you think you can break this schneid? I mean, we are allegedly
this what? This what?
Schneid.
What's that mean?
Schneid means like you strike out kind of thing. I'm sorry.
I never heard
it's
that
a guy
maybe
term.
It's Yiddish.
Okay.
No, I think about it.
It's
whatever
Yiddish,
it is.
Okay.
But there is a horrible. By the way, Emily's list. Did you see the listing and posting on Emily's list? The typo they had.
It's terrible.
Yes,
they made a mistake.
We should say it's obviously a typo they made. They said they endorsed Emily's list. This is obviously important. Women's organization endorsed Martha Coakley and meant to say the first elected governor of Massachusetts. And they said the worst. Elected governor.
Worst woman.
That was really obviously one person.
Well, I could be the best and the worst,
that's
right?
Because that would
be
the only one.
And look, these gremlins happen. This is why you develop a sense of humor.
But that's do you right. not worry about it? We seemingly are not. I don't get it. We seemingly are not crazy about having women in executive positions.
No, Elizabeth Warren has gone to Senate. We have a congressional race where we have two women candidates in it.
Fifth CD, yeah.
Yeah, I think there's a good chance that a woman will be joining Nikki Tsongas in Washington.
Why do you think, though, that the history has been, and maybe it is turning with Elizabeth Warren, maybe it's a different era, but why do we have this horrible history? And it is a horrible history.
You know, my sense is that politics is very competitive here, as you know. when a seat opens up, there's a lot of people fighting for that seat. And so, look, we have 12 good people in a mayor's race. And, you know, only two can make the primary. Only one can be mayor. All of those people in that race, virtually all of them, have a great political future. They'll run again. They're going to stay engaged. So, look, like anything else, you try stuff, you win, you lose, you keep all successful people have failed. I've learned that. The one thing they share in common is that they get back to work and they keep trying.
You know, there have been a lot of stories this year. The Herald has done a lot of them about fraud in the welfare system and EBT card abuse. We were just this morning looking at how you get onto the exchanges for Obamacare, and I didn't understand how you could figure this out unless you had like some kind of PhD or something.
A degree from Stanford, perhaps.
Exactly. That's right. And then I read
Marjorie
about
which Marjorie does if this, you don't appreciate this, the I reference.
Do.
Yes, I know
I
you do.
Do.
I didn't know if the listeners did.
But then I read about this Medford couple, and they have been apprehended, if that's the correct word. But the couple with the $80,000. The husband, I think, had the $80,000 a year job. And yet for 6 years, they were getting health insurance and food stamps and mass health and disability to the tune of $161,000. And I know they had been found out, but they were able to pull this off for 6 years. I find this just incredible. How can people have confidence in our system were you to become the governor here when you read about a couple like this? It's
I thought
amazing.
You were going to say you'd like to know how they did it.
I would
you,
like
then
to
you
know.
Could figure out how you get
well,
those benefits.
Well, it is pretty amazing. They must have had a PhD from Stanford or something.
Well, look, we start from the premise that we believe people should get these kinds of benefits, right? So then you start from the premise that there's always going to be people trying to game the system, and you develop systems both at the beginning that will try and eliminate that as much as possible, which, by the way, we are doing with our new inspector general, with our auditor, with the agencies involved, whether it's EBT cards or these kinds of things. How do we tighten that up? The legislature just asked us to formalize that, and we've worked, as we did in our office, after the big dig, we had teams that made sure the stimulus money coming into Massachusetts did not go awry. And I'm really proud of the fact that we focused on those dollars and where they were supposed to go. The other piece that we've been really active on is when we get complaints like this, we investigate them. We hold people accountable. We bring civil suits. We bring, criminal suits. We just someone just went to jail for 2.5 years for running a convenience store where they're getting kickbacks on EBT cards. We're going to continue to do that. Watch where the dollars are going. They should be going where they're supposed to go and hold people accountable when they break the law.
Two last quick things from me. What do you think of Charlie Baker? Silence.
Charlie Baker has been in Massachusetts for a long time. He's got a great family. His wife is terrific. He's done some great things in his life. And I look forward to winning a primary. I look forward to a primary first. That's what I'm focused on. And I'll look forward, if I'm successful, to talking to Charlie about who should be the next governor.
Now, last thing for me is you, I believe, filed the first lawsuit that successfully challenged the Defense of Marriage Act.
And first and only.
First, and it wasn't
first
the
states.
One that didn't go to the Supreme Court, but I know you were sitting there for the Supreme Court. I know you hang out with attorneys general, and I assume if you're governor, you'd hang out with governors. What's the strategy for the 30-some states that have constitutional bans? It's not the law. It's not an executive order. Constitutional bans on same-sex marriage. Is there any route out of that realistically other than hoping that the Supreme Court ultimately goes the whole nine yards? What's the strategy amongst people like you to essentially break that logjam in two-thirds of the states?
Well, and other folks are working on this state by state as well at the federal level. The thing that's been the most successful, actually, is when real people actually see, as we did in Massachusetts, that we have daughters, sons, uncles, mothers, co-workers who are gay, who are lesbian. And you know what? We love them. We work with them. And we recognize that fundamental right of marriage is so important. It's a very conservative value, frankly, to make that commitment to spend time with someone, to raise a family if you choose. That is going to, I think, much sooner than people think, with a new generation coming along, take hold in states. It may take ultimately some Supreme Court action. But the best news is that in this movement, this has been from the bottom up, because people know that it's wrong to deny people they know, love, work with the right to marry.
Okay, before you go, tell people what's the first thing you complained about when you walked into the studio before we went on air. Just tell the truth.
What'd
go ahead, Martha. She complained. First words out of her mouth.
I said, where's the Bruce Springsteen?
Right in our old incarnation. Hey, Martha Coakley, good luck.
Songs.
We hope to see a lot over the next campaign.
I look forward to coming back. Thank you, guys.
I did
Thank
see
you.
Martha Coakley do a lip sync to Aretha Franklin's Respect.
How was that?
It was pretty impressive, I must say. Yeah, absolutely.
She has a smile on her face
okay.
right now.
Attorney General Martha Coakley is running for governor on the Democratic ticket. Tune in next week to hear from another person who's in the race, State Treasurer Steve Grossman. When we come back, we're going to go over new music releases. But first, stick around to hear about how you can keep locally produced shows like Under the Radar and Boston Public Radio and Innovation Hub on the air.
I'm Marco Werman. You've heard the Muslim call to prayer before. Well, next time on The World, the imam who's chanting here, he's got another form of expression. He's got a band, a rock band, and it's getting him into a world of trouble with religious authorities. Turkey's a rockin' imam, plus the news, on The World from PRI.
This afternoon at 3 here on 89.7 WGBH.
This program is made possible thanks to you. An old Sturbridge village where you can see brilliant fall foliage and enjoy old-fashioned harvest events. Meet the farm animals, ride the stagecoach, see hearth cooking and the blacksmith at work. Details at osv.org. And Boston University's Executive MBA, Real Flexibility, Real Outcomes. Online information session October 9th at noon. More information at bu.edu/embA.
Listening to Jim and Marjorie at lunchtime is kind of like having a lunch date with my well-informed aunt and uncle, and I realized that I needed to start contributing to our lunch date by becoming a sustaining member. Hi, my name's Amanda from Dorchester, Massachusetts, and I'm a sustainer for WGBH because I think it's important to be an engaged member of my community. And it really just takes a couple of minutes to figure out how you can best give for the coming year, and you get to pick a gift, which is also really exciting, and it's a way to advertise that I'm an active member of the WGBH community and be part of the community that's giving back to the radio station that gives me so much.
Yeah, that sustainer, Marjorie, was a woman we didn't even know. We didn't even know we had a niece out there, but apparently we did. You know, it's easy to do at WGBHnews.org with a quick call to 888-897-9424. Hi there, everybody. I'm Jim Browdy. Marjorie Egan's here, too. You're listening to WGBH's Boston Public Radio during our annual fall fundraiser, and that's when we all work together to keep programs like this one and other great ones on the station going strong. With more, here's our coworker, WGBH's Amanda Goodwin.
Thanks so much for having me in here today. You know, that discussion with Mark the Coakley is really what we're trying to bring more of to the air. It's an excellent example of what we do here at Boston Public Radio. You know, we ask the questions that you want asked. We talk to thought leaders. We talk to difference makers. And I think it's really easy for you to forget the difference that you can make in that process and to discredit just how much of a role you actually play in making this come to life each and every day. You know, Jim and Marjorie are here because you allow them to be here, because you open up these studios for them to do this show, because you make this station possible. And this is the important moment when we try to put you into the show. And so if you can make that gift right now and keep this program going strong, it would be so greatly appreciated. Let me give you the phone number. It's 888-897-9424. Of course, you can also get involved this afternoon on our secure website. That's WGBHnews.org.
Yeah, and after Martha Coakley, we're going to be hearing some great new music, which is going to be totally fantastic. Everybody knows the government shut down while most of us were in bed, but all this afternoon and tonight and all as long as this lasts, 89.7 will be updating you on the situation, letting you know just how things will affect us as a country and as a community here in Boston and New England, keeping you connected to the news and each other is the entire point of 89.7. It's why we do what we do and why we need your help to keep on doing it.
And thank you, a big thank you, I really want to say to everybody who's done their part today, including, let me read some names, Lori in Acton, Roland in Andover, Grasha, I hope I get the name right, it's actually quite beautiful, in Marblehead, Jennifer in Cambridge, David in Linfield, and the hundreds of others who've gotten involved during this campaign.
And, you know, thank you so much to everyone who's done their part. If you can get to your phone or get online to add your voice to the chorus, that would be great. And speaking of chorus, we've got a little music offer on the table right now. You know, this Saturday night at 8 o'clock, WGBH Television will be airing the world premiere of Elton John in concert. It's a show that's only available on public television, and because WGBH is both public radio and public television, we've got an offer right now for a gift of just $12 a month as a sustainer. You'll pre-order a copy of that exclusive DVD, plus reserve a copy of Elton's latest CD. It just came out last week, actually. It's called Diving Board. It's the perfect gift for you or for someone maybe on your holiday list. You can reserve both of those right now, plus in addition, for everyone who makes a gift right now, you'll also be entered into a drawing to win a pair of front row seats to see Elton John when Sir Elton comes to the TD Garden on November 12th. 888-897-9424 is the phone number to get in on that drawing and take advantage of that special DVD CD offer for a sustaining gift of just $12 a month. 888-897-9424 or WGBHnews.org.
Okay, so Amanda just listed all these great incentives, the exclusive DVD CD Elton John offer, the tickets to his only concert in Boston. But the reason, the real reason to get involved is because I think you like what you hear on 89.7, and you depend on public radio to keep you informed and updated on days like this when real news hits and has a real impact, not only in Boston, not only in Massachusetts and New England, but all across the country. You are appreciated being a part of that conversation. So you can do your part with a call to 888-897-9424 or just click the orange donate button at WGBHnews.org.
Drop off the kids, buy groceries, get an oil change, pick up the kids, mow the lawn.
Whatever you have to do this week, thanks for taking Boston Public Radio along for the ride. So how about crossing another thing off your to-do list and keep all your favorites free and available here on 89.7 by signing on as a WGBH sustainer? You choose the amount, $10, $20, or $30 a month, whatever works for you. That amount will renew automatically, and that means one less thing for you to worry about. Become a sustainer by calling 888-897-9424 or give online at WGBHnews.org.
Welcome back to Boston Public Radio. Jim Browdy and Marjorie Egan. Every couple of weeks, we get a few of our friends in here to talk about new releases. Maybe someone suggested we call this today Music to Get Furloughed, too. But I think that's really totally unkind, so I'm not going to say that. We're joined by TV and pop music critic who got to go to Dunkin' Donuts with Bryan Cranston. I'm so jealous. I can't see straight. Sarah Robin, how are you, Sarah?
I'm so well, Jim. How are you doing?
And Edgar B. Herwick III, who is the man behind WGBH's Curiosity
Guilty.
Desk.
Hey, Guilty.
Edgar.
Hey, Jim. Marjorie.
Good to see you both.
Sarah,
nice to see you.
What
nice
a beautiful
you.
Day, beautiful studio here.
Now, the way we usually do this is the way we're going to do it again today. We start with one of you. You tell us why you love something new. We play a little. Then the other one does it. Is that fair? Are we okay
it's
with
so
it?
It's so fair.
Sarah, I don't think there's any reason to switch it up yet.
It's yeah. working
let's
well,
just keep
right?
it.
Sarah,
I mean,
it feels like a contest that
it
way.
Does.
I feel like I should get a prize at the
yeah.
end.
So because
we
you
need
always
to work
win.
On that.
I don't think you're quite
time.
As competitive as Edgar. But in any
oh,
case.
You don't remember, brother?
And boy, we should tell people, too. We should tell people, too. Because I think a lot of people, when you're driving, I mean, I've been in this experience where I have to pull over the side of the road or I'm on the Mass Turnpike and I can't. You're listing all these great songs. So where can we find these songs so people don't have to worry about writing them down right now?
WGBHnews.org. As soon as the show
one.
Is over, they'll all be listed.
WGBHnews.org. So you don't have to panic and write them all down.
All online.
Now.
Now, Sarah, even though we were totally resentful and angry that you got to interview Bryan Cranston and we didn't, you can start things off today.
Well, thank you very much.
What did
much.
He get at Dunkin' Donuts?
He got a decaf black coffee. He's
really?
Off the caffeine while he is while he's performing in the show. He normally drinks caffeine.
Okay, we don't want to talk about
why
that.
Is he off the caffeine while he's performing in the
he's
show?
He's off the caffeine, the alcohol, the carbs, that he's trying to stay in the best shape possible for to keep his stamina up for the
because as we
shows
all know, LBJ
caffeine.
Never had a drink ever.
But doesn't well, caffeine help
LBJ
your stamina?
LBJ also didn't have to do 3-hour plays every night.
Does it help your stamina? I mean, I wouldn't be able to function without caffeine.
You'd have to ask him yourself.
I guess
and by
so.
The way, the
I
LBJ reference, for those who missed it, is he has been starring in this great production of All the Way about LBJ that's probably going to Broadway. That's Bryan Cranston we're talking about as
it's
LBJ.
So good.
It is brilliant. It is unbelievable. Sarah Robin,
yes.
What's your first pick
okay.
of the day?
Let us start with a classic. Let us start with Elton John, who has a new album out called The Diving Board. And Elton John has been trying to sort of get back to his original sound from the early 70s for a few years now with some success. But this record, he finally nails it. This is the Elton John that if you loved him in the beginning, you will love this. Just piano, drums, voice, simple.
The Bernie Taupin
lyrics.
This is your song kind of day.
Yeah, absolutely. It's so great. And the song that we are going to listen to is actually, I was shocked to find out, because I don't normally like the single the most as a song, but it is the single, and it is called Home Again.
The world had seven wonders once upon a time. It's sure enough the favored nations aided their decline. And all around me I've seen times like it was back when. But like back then, I'd say amen if I could get back home again.
I love that. If I could go. That's beautiful.
And that harmony that is just so Elton John. It's like such a specific sound to him. This record brings back sort of the drama and the beauty without all that production glob, without all the Disney, Broadway sort of extra sugary
and that
stuff.
Strain of sort of simple melancholy that he has mm-hmm. in his voice in those songs of the 70s, songs like Rocket Man, even the ones that kind of rocked a little bit, that sort of melancholy sweet strain.
Yeah, and you know, I read him talking about this album someplace, and he's talking about how his life is, his personal life is much in order now. I guess he's got a few kids, and mm-hmm. how much he loves being home again because he's in a stable relationship, and the children and all that. Reminds me a little bit of that John Lennon thing. Remember when John Lennon wrote the Watching the Wheels Turn Round and Round?
That's a great song. Right.
It's
yeah.
about great being song. Home with his son when he's about 5 years old, right before he got killed, unfortunately.
Jim, Marjorie, anybody know where you could get your hands on an Elton John DVD and CD for, say, $12 a month?
I actually yeah. happen to know. Do you,
I think you can.
Become a sustaining member
That's right.
of WGBA?
That's right.
I did not do this
and
on purpose.
Yours.
That's right.
I know. Sarah's the one who doesn't work here. I had no idea.
Okay, what have you got, Edgar B. Herrick III?
Speaking of the 70s, I'm going to talk about a band called Dr. Dog, who have a new record out. They're from Philadelphia.
Ooh.
And they have a little bit of a 70s sound. And one of the cool things about this album is they've been around for a while now, and they've slowly kind of built up an audience and been able to make a living at this. So while they were making this album, they were also building their own studio where they could kind of hang out and live and take their time and make a record in the time that they wanted to make it. So the record itself is called B Room, which is the name of this studio that they were building in Philadelphia in kind of, you know, kind of a shaggy neighborhood of Philadelphia. And this is a good record, very much in the style of how they've been playing for a number of years now. So if you haven't heard of them or from them before, this is a taste of what they sound like. This is a tune called Minding the Usher.
Never been a bad band from Philadelphia. No. Let's face it, no. They just don't make them.
I should mention this is a different song than Minding the Usher. This one's called "The Truth." The truth don't stop, as you hear there. But no, absolutely, and you hear even a little bit of a Hall and Oates flavor to that. A little nod to the blue-eyed soul of Philadelphia past in that. But these guys are great, and they're great live, and this is a really good record.
Edgar and I are Pennsylvania boys. For
That's
those
right.
who do not know the personal history,
you guys pick great stuff. Every time you
we
come,
do,
it's just great stuff.
Thank All right,
you,
let's keep the Philly brotherly love going now.
Okay.
All right.
And we're going to talk next about The Roots, who are from Philadelphia. They teamed up, oddly enough, with Elvis Costello. And
One
on paper,
favorites.
This sounds like kind of a strange combination. And actually, in execution, it is kind of a strange combination. But there are some songs on this record, which is called Wise Up Ghost, which is out now, that are just really interesting and sort of hip-hop and jazz and rock and roll and pop. And a lot of it is Elvis coming to them, Elvis sort of being funky. And this song is actually called Stick Out Your Tongue, and if you love Elvis Costello, you may recognize the tune.
We're gonna belt them down for pills and soap. Stick out your tongue, stick out your tongue.
Stick Out Your Tongue, a tribute to Miley Cyrus.
That's right, exactly. It's a song all about twerking. Yeah. But it's funny because the Elvis Costello fans out there now, some of them are going, of course, and some of them are scratching their heads. The first time I heard this, I was like, it's so familiar. It's because it's actually a song called Pills and Soap that he has reworked from his earlier catalog with like a different musical vibe and some different lyrics. And but it's very funky. It's a very moody record. It may not be for everybody, but it's pretty cool.
The Roots have become, you know, the band that everybody wants to collaborate with, like across genre. I mean, it's got gotten crazy. It's
They're
awesome.
So good. Joe Jackson did a record with them as well. And
they're with Jimmy Fallon singing the Sesame Street theme song exactly. on YouTube. I mean, they are everywhere.
Really?
They're everywhere.
They are. They're
that
everywhere.
Is a great, that is an incredible video, I
it
should
is.
Say.
It
we
is.
Ought to take a break. We're going to get more music. Edgar goes next. Before we do, you get 15 seconds since you sat down with Bryan Cranston.
Yes.
What's your review of the finale of Breaking Bad, Sarah Robin?
I thought it was great. I know some people thought it was a little too tidy, but I'm a fan of tidy. And so I enjoyed it very much. Walt went out the way he was supposed
to go. He did
go
out. Yes, he did. How about you, Edgar, in 10?
Absolutely satisfied. Absolutely satisfied. Well,
fair enough. He
I
said
like
it
that.
Right there.
I think
it's
that's
perfect.
An interesting adjective.
It was
tidy.
Perfect for the show.
Tidy. A lot of blood. A lot of...
but it from was a very, story standpoint, it
was very
tidy.
Tidy kind of shooting sort of thing. Okay.
More
okay.
Sarah Rodman and Edgar B. Herrick
III.
Right. More songs coming up right after this.
As a community organizer and politician, Mel King's impact on Boston is ingrained into the history of our city.
When you ask, who do we want to be the mayor? I want people to be their own mayor, to understand that they have skills and power to change the situation.
I'm Adam Riley. Join me for a special conversation with Mel King, Sunday night at 6 here on 89.7 WGBH, Boston Public Radio.
This program is on WGBH thanks to you and Cambridge Savings Bank, a proud member of the community for over 175 years, providing a full range of financial products for individuals, families, and businesses. Because legacy matters. CambridgeSavingsBank.com. And the Boston Conservatory, America's oldest performing arts conservatory, presenting Rodgers and Hammerstein's Oklahoma, 10 performances from October 17th through the 26th. Tickets at bostonconservatory.edu.
Hey, this is Edgar B. Herwick III. So if WGBH was a house, I think that the Curiosity Desk would be the attic. It would sort of be like the attic in Goonies, if you've ever seen that movie, you know, right? There's like a treasure map up there. There's some old photographs and newspaper clippings. You know, there's like scientific devices, mechanical devices. Maybe there's a telescope. You know, you take your time up there, you browse. And that's kind of what we try to do with the news and with stories. And when something's happening in the news with the Curiosity Desk, it's about looking at it for long enough that all of these surprises start happening.
That, of course, was the third, as we call them here. Online, you go to WGBHnews.org or you call 888-897-9424. Hi there, I'm Jim Browdy. I'm with Marjorie Egan. So good you're here because, as you know, it's the 89.7's annual fall fundraiser. We could really use your help with more as our co-worker from WGBH, Amanda Goodwin. Hi, Amanda.
Hi, thanks so much for having me here. You know, what great timing. During this day of our annual fall fundraiser, we've been talking a lot about Elton John because we've got a great offer on the table. Become a sustainer. Now, sustainers break down their gifts into monthly installments that automatically renew. That automatic renewal, that's the real special part that helps us do a whole heck of a lot of this on-air fundraising and a whole lot more of the program you're actually tuned here for. So become a sustainer for just $12 a month. WGBH can say thanks with a special exclusive DVD of Elton John in concert. It's a premiere concert that only PBS has its hands on, plus a copy of his new CD, Diving Board, that you just heard a little bit about. In addition to making that sustaining gift and keeping all the stuff you love here on 89.7, you'll also automatically be entered into a drawing to win a pair of front row seats to see Elton John at his only Boston performance at the TD Garden on November 12th. But you got to call or give online, and you got to do it today. Here's the number, 888-897-9424. You can also get it done online, WGBHnews.org.
Okay, we are all guilty of putting things off, but in this case, I really hope you'll consider doing your part right now. I am a procrastinator of epic proportions, and what I have learned is that you do need to do things right now to fight the procrastination. So do it now. It's our annual fundraiser, the time when we rally support to keep programs like this one going strong. Plus, when you give now, as Amanda just said, you'll be entered to win a pair of great seats right up front to see Elton John when he plays the TD Garden on November 12th. You just heard the cut from his great new album, The Diving Board, Home Again. It was gorgeous. So he's back. Elton is back. Please take advantage of this offer. And more importantly, make an impact on your community. 888-897-9424 or just click the orange donate button at WGBHnews.org.
I'm Susan Stamberg. In the early days of public broadcasting, the federal government provided the lion's share of funding for programs like Morning Edition, All Things Considered, PBS shows like Sesame Street. Well, times have changed. These days, the majority of money comes from individuals, foundations, and corporations who are passionate about the mission of stations like WGBH. Your support keeps Boston Public Radio available to the whole community. So please, call the station or make your contribution online at wgbhnews.org. And thank you.
Welcome back to Boston Public Radio. Edgar B. Herrick III and Sarah Rodman from The Globe have not gone away. They've got more new music for us.
Okay, the third.
Yes.
What do you got?
Marjorie the Only.
That's right.
The original.
We're going to go with a new record by Nico Case. Now, Nico Case is somebody who's been on the music scene in various incarnations, both as a solo artist with a couple of different bands, one being the New Pornographers, another being Nico Case and her boyfriends. She's been around since the 90s. She's incredibly talented. She's a great songwriter, beautiful singer. And writes very, very interesting songs in all kinds of styles. So she can be big and boisterous and rocking and loud and sort of edgy and punk. And she can be very soft and country and sort of heartbreaking. And she can oscillate between the two, and it doesn't feel schizophrenic at all. So this is a tune called Ragtime from her latest record, which is called The Worst Things Get, The Harder I Fight. The harder I fight, the more I love you. This is a song called Ragtime.
The shades and erase the day. This could be any evening in any place. The blizzard blows from left to right, which is funny because the piano's playing Summertime. From 1935's sounds the alarm, Ragtime.
I love the name of the album. The worst things get, the harder I fight, the harder I fight, the more I love you. That's pretty great.
And this is great. She did an interview on NPR maybe about a week ago on Weekend Edition, and she talked in particular about this song and this album, and she was kind of going through a real rough patch trying to figure, you know, stuff out. Like, everybody kind of goes through these times in their life. And she said the only kind of music she could listen to was Ragtime. It was the only thing that was calming her down, just kind of the simplicity of it, the looping kind of melodies thing, and that's where this song came from. So, really interesting woman, really great album.
You into it, Sarah Ron?
I love Nico Case, have for a long time. And she's one of those voices, like I was saying, she just draws you in, big or small. So good.
She's beautiful, too.
Yeah, flaming red hair.
Yes.
Really attractive.
Okay, Sarah Rodman, you are up yet again.
Going from one attractive individual to another, now we tee up Justin Timberlake, who you may recall, I was here not that long ago, talking about the first half of this record called The 2020 Experience.
Now you are really into Justin Timberlake, aren't you?
I'm not going to lie to you. I enjoy the Timberlake. But in all aspects, like as a Saturday Night Live host,
He's really good on Saturday Night Live.
On Jimmy Fallon, as an artist, maybe he still has some work to do on the acting, but he's a very enjoyable
person. He's not terrible
person.
As an actor.
No, he's not terrible,
you know,
but...
He has a little to go.
He was very good in Black Snake Moan, but in any case, I enjoy the Timberlake. And so, I'm just going to keep saying that for some reason. I like that.
We want to see that in the Globe.
Marjorie, do you want to try it? I enjoy the Timberlake.
The Timberlake. Enjoy him. Love him.
So this is the 2020 Experience 2 of 2. So it's the second half. I actually did not love that first half of this record. There were songs on it I liked a lot, but I thought it was a little meandering in places. And this record, He Has Come to Party, it's more succinct. It's a very good time, although the song that I've picked, of course, is the song that's all about heartbreak. It's the one song on the record that's sad. And this song is called Drink You Away.
Feel it in the morning. You're still here in the morning. I see you, but you're gone. Telephone the doctor, I'm not okay. The bottom of the bottle to fill this empty heart up. A thousand proof, don't chase the truth. I doubt it, but I can't drink you away. I've tried Jack, I've tried Jim, I've tried all of them.
You know, I want to not like him, and I don't know why.
It's very captivating,
he's really
right?
Good. He is really
good. It's seductive.
What do you think of the reuniting with the band a couple of weeks ago?
I was disappointed by how brief it was.
I was too. It was really brief.
They had a lot of songs. That was not my favorite one that they performed. All the rest of them, I was heartwarmed though by how excited all the rest of them were.
Well, do they do? That's actually what I was going to ask you. Do they do anything other than when he allows them to perform?
That's
with
why
him?
They were so excited because they haven't done anything in 16 years.
Do they perform?
Well, JC has made some records. The one that used to have the dreadlocks, Chris Kirkpatrick, had like a clothing line. Joey Fatone has made some movies and hosts some TV shows. Lance Bass is on Sirius Satellite Radio now.
So the answer
they
is
throw
no,
some
they
big parties with the new kids on the block. Occasionally they just get together and hang out.
Exactly.
I thought it was great, though, the other night. I agree with you. It was far too short.
Okay, Edgar, what do you got?
All right, so we're going to go, like I often like to do as I get into my later picks, we're going weird. I like
later
to go weird
picks.
A little bit. I like to bring a little of the weird to the table. And this is the third record from a group called MGMT. They're a duo, one who's kind of more the traditional songwriter vein, and the other one who's the sort of bleeps and bloops kind of making all the noises and strangeness kind of guy. They actually have ties to Wesleyan University. They've been around for their first record they put out, and it was this like huge success, like unexpectedly. It was called Oracle Spectacular. Was this big hit called Kids that was on the radio. And these guys kind of in their second record revolted because they didn't really want to be a big popular band. And so they went super weird on their second record. It confused a lot of critics. I think it was criminally underrated. I think it was really, really good. And this newest record is very much in the vein of that second record. It continues some sort of psychedelic explorations and very Syd Barrett-like melodies. You hear a little bit of early Pink Floyd in this. But this is a tune called Alien Days, which is the single from their newest record, which is called MGMT. Must have scared the ship and joined the team for a ride. A couple hours to learn the controls and commandeer both my eyes. Hey, creaky dear, hands are uncertain. 1 month crawling, next year blurring, decades in the dream. Monograms on the brain.
There is a Pink Floydian thing
absolutely.
There.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
It's
bit
like
of
we've all just taken
Bowie.
Mushrooms.
Yeah.
That's right.
That was Sarah Rodman speaking. Let's be clear.
Very psychedelic.
We haven't.
Yeah. It's really good. And yet, for all of the psychedelic feel, if you listen through the record, there's something distinctly modern about it as well. And they kind of talk about trying to match up some of the things that were happening in the 60s aesthetically with some of the sounds of the 80s. And sort of, for some reason, for me, it really, really works. So
now,
I like
noticed, I don't know if you noticed, that when each of you are doing a selection, the other person, Edgar or Sarah, are looking at each other. Sarah did not make eye contact with you when you were praising them, which leads me to believe that you do not like that. Is that correct,
no,
Sarah?
No, I enjoyed it.
Why did you not make eye contact?
I'm not sure. I was listening to the lyrics
I'm sorry.
Part of it.
Okay,
and then set the controls and commandeer. It was very Pink Floyd-y, set the controls for the Heart of the Sun kind of thing. I was just off in space, maybe.
we don't often talk about lyrics when we're on here, but another thing I really like about MGMT is, surprisingly, they're simple and they can be strange, but the lyrics can be very powerful. It's a lot about time passing and you not being able to kind of hang on to it quickly enough and stuff. A lot of pretty profound stuff coming out of a young guy. So another reason to get into them.
I think you have our last one, Sarah Robin.
Yeah,
is that
time
true?
For one more?
Yeah, we do. We have time.
Okay, great.
All right, excellent. Then while we're going to go way down south and get funky and sweaty with Austin, Texas band called Black Joe Lewis and the Honey Bears. Now this is your full-on mason jar moonshine joint. Hot stuff. I'm a little afraid that the song I picked might have swear words in it, so hopefully somebody listened to it. But.
Well, they didn't, but let's all cross our fingers. Are we okay to play this, gentlemen and ladies? Yes, we are, apparently.
All right. Well, isn't the FCC shut down? Let's go for it. This song is called Skull Diggin'.
I think we made it. I think we made it okay. Did we not?
Oh, yeah, it was
okay,
all right.
Fine.
What is it to skull dig?
I don't want to speculate.
Maybe it's mind melding. Yeah. It's like a Vulcan mind meld thing. I don't know.
You know, but I feel so much more hip. My iPod is so much more hip.
Thanks to these two.
To you guys. I mean, it was so boring. It was Bruce Springsteen and Joni Mitchell and all those guys. But now I feel like.
And now there's Elton John on it.
Yeah, well, that's it. I don't feel quite so out of it because, boy, we listened to him a million years ago, didn't we?
Now, Edgar, we were told, is Marjorie in a couple of seconds lets people know what we're doing tomorrow after we thank Sarah Robin, by the way. It's great to see you again.
Good to see you.
Even though you didn't send Brian Cranston to our studio after he was with you at Dunkin' Donuts, we will forgive you. As Marjorie tells people what's happening tomorrow, we're apparently you're going to send us out with a song. Is that correct?
Some local boys. Deer Tick from Providence, Rhode Island. They got a new record out, and this is the new record's called Negativity. This song is called The Dreams in the Ditch. And speaking of Bruce Springsteen, you'll hear strains of the E Street
Band. Sounds like
it
already.
Yeah, it's very good. It's a good record. These guys are really good. And they're local. Providence, Rhode Island. Thumbs up.
Good stuff.
Good name.
Edgar and Sarah, thank you both, as always. Sarah Robin, Edgar B. Herwick III. What's up tomorrow, Marjorie?
Up tomorrow is... tomorrow we got Brian McGrory on. Brian McGrory is on every Wednesday at 1 o'clock, and he's going to be in. He, of course, is the editor of the Boston Globe. We're also going to talk about the latest on Boston's local art scene. That's all coming up tomorrow. Again, thank you to Sarah Robin from the Boston Globe, and thank you to Edgar B. Herwick III. Our show is a production of WGBH. I am Marjorie Egan.
And I am Jim Brody. Thanks so much for being here. We'll be back bright and early at noon. Hope you are, too. Bye. Like you got nothing.